This is Church Tech Profiles, episode 13 for the week of December 21st, 2020, crossover episode part two. Well, hey everybody, this is Van, and this week we're going to continue with part two of the interview and talk that I did over on Church Sound Podcast, the Church Sound Podcast, a while back. Prentice Thompson was nice enough to have me on, and we had a fantastic time just hanging out, talking about church tech and sound and training engineers and doing sound checks and all kinds of good stuff. So if you haven't gone over to the Church Sound Podcast, please do so. Prentice is an awesome guy, and he's really trying to help the church tech community as a whole, and he's just a great guy. I think we're going to be doing more stuff with him. Kind of crossover East Coast, West Coast stuff. You know, I'm in California. He's in New York. So we're trying to do some more stuff together. So anyway, this is my interview with him on part two over on the Church Sound Podcast. So enjoy.
So I find that, and even if I'm training the techs, I find that you have to find out if they are equipped to do it. Because some people, they're not equipped to do it. It's nothing against them. They just don't have the focus to focus to do it.
Right. Yeah.
You may have the because there's
knowledge and then there's acumen, you know, or ability.
Right.
Those are different things because I mean, you and I, anybody listening to this podcast, we've all met sound guys, lighting people, that they have the knowledge. I mean, they can tell you what everything does and they know every menu in the Yamaha CL or the Allen, the S7000, whatever.
Right. The terminology of the
class. Right. They're showing
they
me,
mix.
Yeah. They're showing me stuff on the wave sound grid that I'm like, I didn't even know that was a function on there, you know? But they don't know how to put it in practice. You know, Wave Sound Grid is like it can be the best thing you can buy. It can be just a knife in the back of your mix. I just remember, National Worship Leader Conference is a thing. A couple of years ago, I mixed the one in Kansas City and, got in there and the very first, they had a Yamaha CL and they had Wave Sound Grid. And I don't know how this guy has his stuff set up. Right. So the first thing I do is I just unclick every instance of Sound Grid, right. Every plugin just to get stuff up and run, just to get like to a baseline, get right. back to a baseline mm-hmm. stuff. Cause I don't know. Like, I mean, cause you know, I mean, you know, how plugins are, you could spend 45 minutes on a C6 on one channel, you know, and I'm like, okay, I don't have time to do that. I'm going to have 20 acts a night doing one song. All this is getting clicked off. And I'll tell you what, I've gone into churches where they have volunteer sound people or great people or whatever, and they've got Wave Sound Grid turned on and their mix is terrible. And I'm like, why does everything sound like that? And then I start looking at Wave Sound Grid and I'm like, wow, okay. You got five instances.
You got five compressors on this one channel.
On one channel. You got a 1176, you got a C6, you've got SSL, you've got mm-hmm. do you know how all those are interacting with each other? I don't think you do, you know. I mean, right. let's just
click. And a multi-delay.
Yeah, and so why don't we just click all this stuff off for a second? Click, click, click. Now let's pull his vocal back up. Boom. And it's like, it just comes alive. And the guy looks at me and goes, wow, that sounds great. I'm like, yeah, see, you don't need all this stuff. So we're going to zero all that out. We're going to grab just the C6. mm-hmm. And we're going to flatten it out first because I don't know why you're compressing all these frequencies. It's not even in the vocal range, but the guy doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the compressors is compressing like 15K. And I'm like, okay, you do realize that guy singer,
not up there. It's not
none of his voice is in that range. There's no reason to compress any of that up there. And so, you know, flatten all that out. Let's get this going. And then you just ease him back into it. And I'm like,
if there's nothing wrong with using that stuff. I love that stuff, but don't think that's going to solve your problem.
Right.
And they don't have the acumen to go, I need to start at a baseline and get the mix as good as I can and then start adding in stuff.
Right. Right.
When I have a sound grid, I never start with it on ever. Zero. It's always off. And I try to get gain staging, the whole shot, get it dialed in as much as I can to where we actually kind of have a mix going. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, sounds pretty good. Because another thing, you know, that we haven't talked about is, but that's huge to me is, I believe that 80% of the mix happens before the preamp. So
yeah, I agree with you.
Where the mic is, like if it's on an amplifier, like where the mic is, what the mic is, where is it on the speaker on the amplifier? Mm-hmm. And then go even farther back. What amplifier is it? Does the player know how to set up his gear? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I remember one time, this kid came in, I won't even say what church it is, but he came in with this really expensive rig. He had like a matchless, anniversary, series. He had a Duesenberg. He had a Duesenberg guitar. He had the biggest, Dynalectro pedal board I'd ever seen in my life. I think he had every one of their pedals and all hooked up. He starts playing and I'm like, that sounds like garbage. And so I grabbed the worship creator, the creative pastor. And I said, what do you think about this? He said, that sounds terrible. I said, hey, can we do an experiment? So we walked up on stage and this church has their, the amps in cabinets backstage. Right.
Okay.
So, and then, you know,
which is beautiful. God,
which is, you know, look, man, there's radio makes these boxes called SGIs. Buy them. You can remote the amps. It's a beautiful world. It's all good. So they had it. So I walked back in the back and we opened up the cabinet and I said, listen to this amp. And it just sounded like garbage. And he goes, oh, that's terrible. So I said, can I talk to this kid and see if we can straighten this out? He said, sure. I literally go and I say, hey, do me a favor. Can you bypass all your pedals? And I'm going to do a couple of little things to your amp just because we're trying to clean up some stuff. And he's like, oh, sure. Okay. So what I did on his amp is I literally zeroed everything out on the amp. Cause a matchless sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm.
You got to do too much to it.
You don't have, that's why it's one of the greatest amps ever made. Right. And so, you know, just got it, you know, a little bit overdrive and everything else was flat. And then go back, said, okay, just your tuner and that reverb, and then flatten out your EQ on your guitar and then play for us. And so he starts playing. We go back in the back and the worship pastor goes, wow, that sounds great. I'm like, yeah, you don't need all that stuff. I said, so I can't tell him this, but you can, because he works for you. Can you tell him that this is the sound we're going for and not to engage all those pedals, just to use the reverb that he's got, his volume control, whatever. He said, yeah, I'll do that. So he did. I get back to the back and one of the other engineers there goes, why didn't you just, cause we had Avid consoles at the time. He said, why didn't you just put an emulator on it? You know, just, I'm like, because it's not my job for the guitar to sound good. That's his job. It's right. His job for the guitar to sound good. He's the guitar player.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So let's make it sound good at the source. And then I'm not fighting the whole thing. I mean, yeah, I could have put a guitar emulator plug-in on there and mm-hmm. faked it. But then I would have spent 25 minutes
trying to fix his sound and finding out what's wrong, right. And then putting the plug-in on and going, okay,
And I'm not a guitar player, so I don't really know those emulator plugins all that well, you know, so I don't know if I'd have done a better job than he was doing,
right.
But I did know enough to get up there and just go, let's get a pure sound happening out of this thing. And then let's put, you know, and microphone placement is so important. The kind of microphone you use, all these things are super important. Like you were saying, are the vocalists cupping the mic? You know, do they think they're in a, you know, a lot of people today that are vocalists, they think they're in a music video. I'm like, look, you cannot look at the way people hold microphones in music videos.
Right. It's not on.
Fake. It's that fake thing. So you can't cover the mic and try to sing through it and have it sound good. So right. Why does my mic sound so terrible? Well, because most your hand is over most of it. That's why, you know, so you have to do a lot of, like I said, folks, you know, cut yourself some slack. There's a lot going on here, and the whole team has to work in unison, you know? And that's why, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about while you were talking about you coming in and doing consulting is, I will tell you, I've done a lot of it. I know, Prentice, you've done a lot of it. It is so important. If you have a church, find somebody locally that, like a bigger, like go to, if you go to a bigger church in your town and you go, man, they got it together. It sounds good here. I like it. It's not our style of music, but it's good. Go to the sound engineer or the tech director or something and say, hey, would you be willing? We'll stipend you or whatever. We'll feed you, whatever you can do. Would you be willing to come and hang out in a sound check and a service at our church, like one weekend, and just like give us some notes? Because you guys got it together here and we want to get it together. And, you know, be humble and just go, I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know about you, but that's how I learned a lot of stuff. I had to be humble and go to these guys that were better than me and just go, I don't know how to do that. Can you help me? Can you show me how that's done?
Right.
And I will tell you now, I've been mixing for 40 years, more than 40 years, and I still learn a ton from shows I go to, people I meet. And it doesn't matter what the style of music is. It doesn't matter what the style of the church is.
It doesn't matter the experience of the engineer.
I like standing behind. I went, so I had the privilege of, we were working with the Potter's House in Dallas. And they were looking at getting some new consoles. And so I had the privilege of going over and hanging out with them for a midweek service and they were testing out this console and we were working with them and stuff. And their one engineer, and I was just standing there, but I got to be there and just listen to him work. And this guy was good. I wish I could remember his name. It's totally escaping me right now, but he was a good engineer. And man, he made that thing sing. And I was just like, wow. And some of the stuff he was doing, I was like looking at the console and I'm like, and I know the SSL pretty well because we sold a lot of them. And I'm like, wow, he's doing that with that compressor. And wow, I would have never thought of that, you know? And he's like bus compressing the whole choir and all this stuff. And he's doing all this crazy stuff with the console he'd literally been on for 5 minutes. I mean, literally just that day. And I was like, wow, I learned so much from this dude. And I was supposed to be the one showing him the console and doing all this stuff, but he was teaching me. And when the service got going, I was like, wow, this sounds really good. Like this is real good. And I'm just like watching him the whole time and I'm asking him questions. I'm like, hey dude, how are you getting this? And how are you routing that? And this guy was probably 25 and I was 55, you know? So he's half my age and he's teaching me all kinds of stuff about this console. And I was like, I got a huge education on that console that day from a guy that we were demoing the console for, you know, and cause he was good. He was a good sound engineer, you know? I mean, you don't get to mix at Potter's House. Not if you don't like,
yeah, you have to
know what you're doing, you know? Right. So everybody who's there, Bill, the TD's fantastic dude, awesome guy. Everybody he brings in are top
notch.
They know what they're doing, you know?
Right.
So I was just in awe. I was like, man, these guys are really good. And amazing. I was watching them and I was just like, okay, yeah, cool. All right. Awesome. That's great. So it doesn't matter if people are younger than you are, older than you are, what their background is, whatever, you can learn from anybody.
That's right.
And you got to be humble. I've been in churches that have had Mackie mixers, analog mixers, and the music, the mix has been really good. And I've looked over the guy's shoulder to see what he was doing. I was like, oh, well, that's how he got that vocal to sound that way. Cool. All right. Great. Fantastic.
Yeah. That's true.
You gotta be humble, and you gotta be, you gotta be willing to learn. I think that's one of the reasons that the, Facebook, bulletin boards have gotten, you know, the Facebook groups and stuff like that have gotten so big. I have my own personal thoughts about some of the advice that's given on them. Sometimes I'm like, that's not really good advice. I think you and I could have a whole podcast on those.
Yes.
But you know, I mean, be careful who you get information from.
That's true.
I will say this, try to find people that have been doing it a lot longer than you or are really good. And don't just listen to somebody that has the one thing that the internet, you and I, we're on the internet. So I'm going to say this and it's going to sound like, well, you guys are on the internet. but a buddy of mine, Lee Fields, once said, he said the problem with the internet, with social media as particularly, is that everybody's voice is at the same volume regardless of whether they're skilled or knowledgeable. And so, right. Good. And we know that, right? I mean, totally.
Right.
You know, it's certainly that way in the political realm and a lot of the other things that are happening.
Right.
And, you know, it's like anybody can get on there and, you know, all of a sudden they've got a bullhorn that's the size of the whole internet, no matter what they think or what they say. It's the same way when we're trying to teach people to do production. So, you know, you can always learn, you can always learn
from anybody,
but make sure you're learning from somebody who's actually doing good work.
Right. Right.
You know?
So what's your sound check process like?
Well, my sound check process, the very first thing I do is go meet the band.
I do the same thing.
If I don't know the band, I'll go down and meet. Well, even if I do know the band, I mean,
I'll say hi. Hey.
And I help them. If you're a sound person, get there early. Here's kind of the whole thing. Be prepared. Like the stage should be set and ready to go. And you should verify that all the inputs work to the console.
Line check.
Before the musicians arrive. Okay. And with digital consoles, you have no excuse, man. You can have an iPad or a Surface or whatever. You can walk down to the stage. You can check them out yourself. And I did that all the time. And so make sure you're ready, and make sure you're prepared. You're mentally prepared. And then when the musicians come in, because you're prepared and because you're ready, you can go in and hang with them. Now I know we got, you know, the whole social distancing thing going on right now, but I'm talking like in, you know, the non-pandemic world of
just 9 months ago. How about that? Right.
Yeah, it's just like, let's see. Well,
it's 11 months ago. How about
was
that?
Was that only 11 months ago? Because it seems like 20 years ago now. It's like time has no meaning anymore. But you know, go and hang out with the musicians, because and get to know people. You know, the production people and the musicians, we're all on the same team. It's not us versus them. And if you know those people, if you know the singers and you know that, it's really hard to be mad at somebody when you know their kids' names. And so, I mean, you can be mad in the moment, but it doesn't, you know, it's not like, you know, having resentment or animosity towards them.
Right.
But
right.
I go down and I even help them. I mean, if I can, I'm going to, hey, let me go to your car. You got an amp too. Okay. Well, hey, I'll pull that in. Let's do that. Help them get set up, the whole shot, be down there, introduce yourself. I know it's hard for some introverts, but do it anyway. Just get out of your comfort zone. So I do that. And then, if I've never worked with anybody with the people before, I actually will explain what my process is going to be. Like, I get everybody on the stage and say, hey, since I've never been here before, I just wanted to let you know, this is kind of how I'm going to do the sound check so that you know what to anticipate. And then there's going to be a moment where you guys get to respond back and do monitor mixes if we still do them from the console. I mean, half the time now they have their own mixers or they do it on their phone. Mm-hmm. That's all great. And if that's the case, I'll say, please don't mess with your in-ear mix or your wedge mix until I've done a line check so that I can get the gain structure all dialed in. Mm-hmm. Then I'll actually say, hey, if you guys want to start dialing in your mixes now, now's a good time,
right?
You know, and then once that happens, you know, I'll just kind of build a mix. I like to do vocals first, which is kind of backwards from a lot of people, because I want to know how loud I can get the vocals. Like, I want to get all the vocals as loud as I can get them. That doesn't mean they're going to be loud in the service, but I want them to be as, I want to know where the,
you want to know where they are,
where my headroom is with all the vocals and the lead, you know, the lead worship leader and all that. Have them all sing and everything. And I say, okay, you guys can kind of chill right now. And then I'll start the traditional way. You know, I'll go drums, you know, drums, bass, guitars, keyboards, and then everything, you know, and then everything else. But every time I add something, I'll have the singer sing. So, okay, singer, sing that song. Okay, drummer, yeah, with a piano, usually a piano or a keyboard, they're playing. Say, okay, hey, drummer, start playing. And then that way, because what ends up happening is the old traditional way of doing things, the way I was taught, and I think the way a lot of sound engineers were taught, is actually incorrect, in my opinion. Because in any live situation, honestly, the vocals are the most important thing. Secular, Christian, whatever, gospel, you know, rock, whatever, it doesn't matter. Vocals are the most important thing. And if you run out of headroom before you get to the vocals, then you're remixing the whole thing. And so like you get the whole band where you like it, and then you add the vocals and you go, I can't do that. Now I got to bring everything down. So I get the vocals in first and just get as much gain out of them as I can before feedback, to where I actually kind of like the mix a little bit. And then I'll start bringing in all the instruments. Because then I can bring in the instruments underneath the vocals and know that I'm never going to run out of headroom with the vocals. So the vocals are always going to be clear and clean. And then then kind of bring in things. You got to remember this when you're mixing, that things may sound good individually, but they don't sound good together. And so we only have so much frequency response in a system. Everything has to occupy a space. So the kick drum may sound phenomenal by itself, and you may be just ripping everybody's guts out, man. It's just hitting you in the chest, and you're just like, I love it. And then you start to add it in with the bass guitar and some other stuff, and you're like, that kick drum sounds terrible now. Well, because everything's trying to occupy the same space, right? So you have to start where you want to end up and then add everything in from that. And especially in church, although I've done this I've done this stuff in non-church stuff too, but especially in church, vocals are the main thing. So you've got to make sure the vocals are right there. And then once you do, you can kind of bring everything in around that and EQ to the space and not to the individual instrument. Because you go, you know what? The guitars are occupying this. So to get it to sound good, sometimes I got to scoop that out of the keyboards.
Yeah.
So that when the guitars come in.
Yeah,
because I mean, you know, in the quote unquote Christian music scene, when worship was starting to take over the Christian music scene, where it was, you know, because now, I mean, honestly, it's all worship music. There's no Christian music like there was in the 80s. It's all worship music. That's what gets played on the radio. That's all the stuff. And so when that started happening, there was this moment, at least in the churches that I was mixing in, where they had like four acoustic guitars on stage and they're literally all playing exactly the same thing. And they're just power strumming. And you're like, well, I could turn three of those guys off and no one would even know.
No. Right.
You know? And so and sometimes I did. Because it was ridiculous. I'm like, I really only need one acoustic guitar. And mostly they're just up there for visual anyway. So I picked the best one. I'd keep him up and I'd turn everybody else down. And no one was the wiser, because it's my job to make it sound good, right? So, but that's the thing. You, everything has to occupy a space. Don't expect to have every instrument at every frequency in every moment, because it's just, it's impossible. A lot of people ask me, and I'm sure you've run into this thousands of times, where people go, yeah, you know, it all sounds really good individually, and then once I put it in the mix, it just sounds like mud. I'm like, well, yeah, right, because everything can't occupy the same frequency space in our right ears. Right. It just can't. Or right in speakers. I don't care how good the speaker system is. You can overload the speaker system by just, you know, it's, we used to call it, in the 80s, we used to call it wall of sound. You know, it was the wall. It comes from the whole old Phil Spector, you know, right, wall of sound.
Right. Right.
But he knew how to make wall of sound sound good. But a lot of guys think that he just turned everything up. And I'm like, no, right, that's not true at all.
Right. Right.
That's not true at all.
Right, right, right.
So it was a wall of sound, but he knew every brick was important, and it was
specific right for yeah a specific reason.
Right.
I did that same thing with when I first started mixing with kick drums and the bass guitar, because I used to always think that the kick drum should be lower than the bass.
Yeah.
And then when I started,
I'm not going to do, yeah.
And I started mixing, I was like, wait a minute, I could feel it, but I can't hear it. Mm-hmm. And now the bass and the kick drum sounds like they're doing the same thing, and I can't tell one from the other.
Right. Yep.
And those are that's the first things I learned about frequency and space and how to create, especially in low frequencies.
And we are going to get right back to the podcast in one moment. The sponsor for this episode is Renewed Vision, the folks that bring you ProPresenter. They are in their 20th year of powering lyric and video presentations of churches of all sizes. Whether it's Windows or Mac, they have an application for your church, and it's really a must-have. I've been using ProPresenter for I don't even know how long. I don't know if it's been 20 full years, but it's been pretty close, and I really wouldn't use anything else. And ProPresenter 7, which was released in January, has a ton of great new functionality like multi-screen support, dual Bible support. It also includes module functionality that was previously had to be purchased separately, but is now inside regular ProPresenter 7, such as edge blending, alpha key, and MIDI controls. One of the cool things that happened when COVID came down is that they also added video streaming directly within the software, and they also added really powerful audio routing functionality. Their latest release introduced integration with Resi, which is formerly Living as One, which is a very powerful streaming platform. So for more information on ProPresenter and all of the Renewed Vision software and applications, go to renewedvision.com. That is renewedvision.com, and we thank them so much for their support. Now back to the podcast. Yeah, we had so at Mariners when we built the big building, I actually had two different subwoofers, and this is back in the day when everybody was still mixing, you know, subs on auxes. You know, that's changed, but everybody used to do it because people didn't understand, including me. I didn't understand time phasing when you have the sub separate from the house speakers. And so, and I know that there are probably people
still do it. I do it a few times, but I like it.
I do it. It depends. It depends on how the system is set up, but most of the newer systems, the way that the companies engineer it, it needs to be full range, you know, and you add and subtract low end through, equalization,
right,
not through submix, through aux sense. I mean, all I'd ever did for 30 years was aux fed subs. I mean, that's what everybody did. But I actually had two subs at Mariners. I had double 18 JBLs, the big giant double 18 concert series JBLs, a bunch of like eight of them. And then I had eight of the EAW double 15s.
Ooh,
as well.
Oh, good Lord.
So what I would do,
go to the bathroom, man.
yeah. And then the top end was Vertec line arrays. Ooh. And so what I did was I would actually, the bass guitar would generally almost always be in the 15s.
Okay.
And the kick drum aux would almost always be in the 18s. So the low frequency of each of them, because I like the bass, the 15s would make the bass more, it'd make it tighter and punchier.
Yeah, punchy, right,
without being super loud. Mm-hmm. And then the kick drum, you could feel it. It would move the earth and, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, so that was something I experimented with for a long time. And you know, it really depends. I'm still a big believer in, you know, you got to have, ultimately you got to have 18s if you want to move, if you want to do ground pound, you kind of got to do it.
You need 18s at least.
Yeah. And so a lot of our bigger systems that we install now, not all of them, but a lot of them will have, especially the L-Acoustics, and Martin systems, they'll have single 18s that are flown with the PA. And those will be full range. And then on the floor underneath the stage, we'll have double 18s that are still aux fit. We don't do that in everything. And L-Acoustics actually doesn't like us to do that. They don't like that. In all their big systems, they don't do aux fit subs. But we still do it every once in a while because sometimes you just need that ground pound. The problem with doing subs on the floor with a big giant system is you end up getting a power alley in the room. Because the subs are so far away from the main speakers that you have this weird phasing thing that's going on, and you have a weird time arrival because people don't understand that low frequency,
right?
The wavelengths are way longer.
Right.
And so everything's arriving at a different time. So, you know, there's a lot of
everything.
Yeah. There's a lot of math happening in a room. Especially when you get into bigger PAs.
Right.
In small rooms, it's not quite as bad. But anyway, I just learned that, you know, you gotta, to go back to the sound check process, you know, I'll just start with vocals and then bring in all the other instruments as needed. My way is just starting with drums and then working backwards. But you know what? I've watched guys do the exact opposite. They literally go, they go vocals, keyboards, guitars, you know,
wow,
bass, and then the drums, and then whatever the other ancillary stuff is, you know, like if there's horns or, you know, stuff like that, you know, if you have a string section or whatever, they'll do that last. But I didn't always do it this way, but I found probably the last 20 years, I always start with the vocals because that way I know I'm never going to run out of room with the vocals.
Right. You're shaping everything around the vocals. So
because what most people will complain about, especially in church, is
I can't hear the vocals.
I couldn't hear the singers. So that means that may not be what I want, you know, and we've all mixed, and let's be honest, folks, we've all mixed services where the singers were terrible. And we were like, you should
this ducking vocalist, like
you should,
yeah, solo like, to the soprano going like, oh, you we should pull her out for a second.
Yeah.
Put her back in.
And the loudest one of them is always the one that's the worst.
Like, right.
You are a terrible singer.
Please find the note.
You have no inhibitions whatsoever, right?
Listen to your neighbor, please. Pick up the note, please.
Well, and that brings up another point. Sorry, our listeners, we're all over the map, but if you ever listen to my podcast, you'll know that's how I am. I'm very ADD. But another thing is, it's super important. Let's talk a little bit for a minute, if you don't mind. Let's talk about monitoring. So in-ear mixes.
Right.
Even small churches now, because Behringer and stuff like that are doing in-ear mixes.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. If you can do it without hurting people, do it, because it cleans up the sound on the stage, which cleans up the front of house. It's all good.
The war is over when you do that.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. It's the best. I love it. But one of the things that I really, unless I'm dealing with professional singers, and I'm talking like paid professional singers, right? Like singers that have been in the studio, I will have all the background singers on one mix.
Okay. I do that. Yeah.
And the reason I do that is that forces them to blend. Because if individual background singers, all of them can mix their own mix, who are they going to turn up the loudest? Them. That blows their, then they have no idea how to mix with the other people.
None.
And so it's, you know, the whole, remember the Shure IEM shirt said I need more of me in the monitor on the back. But the truth of the matter is you shouldn't have more of you in the monitor. You need to have an equal amount when you're singing of all the singers so that you can hear where you sit
right
with them. And I found that if you do that, they will police each other. Like, I literally was just mixing 2 weeks ago at my old church I used to be the TD of. They called me at last minute and said, hey, could you run over and mix? Because, you know, we had a, they had a guy drop out because he had COVID. So all of a sudden he couldn't go. And so I ran over there and mixed. And I love it because he still does it the same way. He has one mix for the background singers. And they were policing each other. They were like, the one person was like, hey, can I have a little bit more of me in there? And the other two of the other singers went, no, we don't need more of you. You're too loud. And they were fighting, but they were just like, and then that person was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that. Okay, cool. And so what it did is it made the vocals way better naturally because they
were working.
They have to work together to make it happen. Right. But the worst thing is, so if you have pro singers, they can all have their own mix. That's totally fine because they understand. They get it. They can hear themselves. They understand what's going on. But most churches do not have professional singers on their platform.
Right.
And so you want them to blend together. So having one mix, now they can turn up their volume on their pack individually, mm-hmm. but the mix they're hearing everybody has to agree on that mix.
Right.
The other thing I don't ever do is if you have mixers on stage, like Avioms or, you know, the Allen Heath Mies mm-hmm. or whatever.
Right. Mixers.
Yeah. Digital Audio Labs, whatever you have. Don't let the vocalist have one of those on the stage. Mix it from front of house. Mix it from front of house. That's just my opinion. The reason is because if you have it on the stage, you have four or five people that are keep changing their mix.
Oh gosh. That's a nightmare.
That's a nightmare for them and for you. And you'll always end up fixing the mix for them. You'll end up going in and physically having to fix it. So just go ahead and mix it yourself and then just have them all determined in sound check. Okay, that sounds good. We're good. Dial it in, put it in a scene. We're good to go. Obviously, if there's people who are soloists or people who are the leaders, they get their own mix, obviously, of mm-hmm. course. But if you have a bunch of background vocals, I never let that happen. And the musicians, that's fine for them to have their own mix, whatever. I mean, right. I don't care as long as they can hear, as long as they don't get off and,
right.
you know, whatever. Right. But, you know, my other little trick is that if you have a music director, which a lot of churches do, if you have a music director, give that person a microphone. And now that you have in-ears, you can talk to the band and you can buy a little pedal switch from Proco that you can put the mic into that. And you have two outputs so you can have it on two channels. And so we, like my last church, Magnolia, the music director sang. He had a great voice. So he sang, but he had a pedal.
Got it.
You can switch from talking to the band
to talking to the
band. And so and they will only make that mistake of doing it wrong one time. Cause all of a sudden they'll be saying something to the band and all of a sudden they'll realize, oh, that was in the house. That was, you know, and so they just got to be, you know, they just have to be able to look down and see which one. Cause usually they have a light, you know, it'll show you which one
you're on.
But that's invaluable. Having a music director that can talk to the band the whole time will hands down make music better in your church.
Awesome.
You know, and you know, that started for us way back at Mariners. We had our music director didn't sing. So his mic was all the time going to the monitor console mm-hmm. and it was up in all the musicians' mixes. So awesome. He was literally leading the band. And he was watching the worship director or the worship pastor. So whoever's leading worship, he's watching them. And so he knows, we're going to do another verse. We're going to do another mm-hmm. chorus. You know,
right. He's just doing a call out. He's just calling
and,
out.
Right. And cause that's what, I mean, you know, I mean, that's what they do. And that's what they do in big shows, big secular concerts and stuff like that. They have.
Yeah. You're talking to each other
the whole time. And it makes it way tighter. And makes it way better. In a lot of places, they'll even have all the musicians will have microphones, and they'll literally have kind of like their own little network, and they can talk back to the music director and different stuff like that. You know, mm-hmm. so you
just
know,
like he would do them, just like he would do a rehearsal.
Yep. Yeah. So anything you can do to enhance that is really great. Soundcheck has changed a lot since we got in-ears. And it's changed even a lot more since we have the personal mixers or the phone app.
Right.
It's actually made sound engineers' jobs a lot easier once you train the, you know, the musicians and the singers.
And the stage is a lot quieter.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You're not fighting with front of house.
Yeah. There's still challenges because it does change the dynamic of the room not to have stage monitors. And if you've been mixing for years, it was actually hard when I started mixing ears. It was a huge challenge right at first because all of a sudden there's not this dynamic of monitors on stage.
Right. You're not fighting something.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden it kind of cleaned everything up. And then you've got to think about your mix. Cause I realized I was actually mixing with the monitors in my mix. You know what I mean? I was relying on that as part of the soundscape,
but not really knowing that you were
and not realizing it. Cause you know, I mean, I grew up in an era where everything was wedges, you know? And so when I had to start pulling that stuff out, it was really interesting, but it's a huge, I mean, and here's the thing, I recommend no matter what size church you have. Now in some churches, like kind of a little more like liturgical churches and stuff like that, mainline churches, having people on in-ears, that may make the congregation kind of uncomfortable, but in most churches that are gospel, rock, you know, whatever, contemporary, they don't care that you have in-ears in, you know, and it will just improve your sound
immensely.
Immensely. And the thing is, you don't even have to have custom molds. You can just have, I mean, Westone, I'm a big fan of Westones, and Westones, man, we had a ton of them, and just got to make sure you clean them, especially now, you know, but everything's got to be cleaned. Everybody's have to have their own, the buds, individual buds, but man, it doesn't have to be like, you know, I'm wearing Ultimate Ears right now that are custom molded for me, but you don't have to have those. You don't need them.
Right. The 315 series, those are good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they sound great. They don't, now, do they sound as good as my five drivers? No.
No.
But you know what? I mean, honestly, I always say this. I always tell people, I said, look, if you're a worship pastor, a worship leader, and you're literally singing or playing every week, if you're up on that stage every week, invest in some good in-ear monitors.
Yeah.
It's worth the $500, $600, $700 because it's your ears. These things fit, you know, really good. They don't fatigue my ears.
Right.
But if you're singing once a month, you know, or once every 2 months,
right,
there's no reason to spend all that money.
Right.
You know, you're going to be fine. And the West Tones and the Shures and there's just lots of companies. They sound they sound fine, you know, and they're less than $100. And if you step on them and break them, people don't freak out as much as if you step on your, you know, $800 Ultimate Ears.
All right. So let's do this.
Yeah.
Before we end, I'm going to ask you three questions. Just give me your answers. For a snare drum, do you like top and bottom or just top?
Just top. Yeah. Sorry. I'm an old school guy. Just top.
Okay.
Beta 57 almost every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Or a Heil. Heil makes
those are really nice.
Heil makes a little drum mic, the 23s, which, they're darker. So if you have a snare that you just can't control, they sound great. I'm a big Heil fan. I had a lot of Heil mics, several of my churches, but yeah, top.
Just top.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite? Oh, I'll say top three guitar mic cabinet mics. Top three.
Wow. Sennheiser E609.
Okay.
I like the old 409s, but you can't get them anymore. And if you find one, they're like $2,000, which is ridiculous because the thing was like $100 when it was new.
Right.
But the 609 sound, very similar. Especially if you need a darker sound, it's another one of those mics. Mm-hmm. A Heil PR 35.
Okay.
Or PR 40, both excellent guitar mics. And you know, to be honest, sometimes just a
57 will fix it.
I mean, sometimes it's just the right mic, you know, it's one of the reasons they've sold more than it. Sometimes the guitar, if you just have like a Marshall half stack, I'm almost always just going to put a 57. They just, and it's, it matters where you place the mic.
So too. I was about to ask you that. So how do you do your on axis, off axis?
So I am a big believer in going with the plane of the cone and putting the mic in between the dust cover and the ridge of the speaker. I see guys all the time stick a mic right in the dust cover. And what they don't realize is there's phasing happening right there. So that is the one place in the speaker where there's actually the least amount of sound. Because since a speaker is curved or concaved, the sound is actually going in. And right in that center, it's actually kind of like canceling it out. So what you want to do is you want to move it up. This is my opinion. And I'm sure there's other sound engineers out there right now listening to this going, you are wrong, man. But excuse me. But yeah, I put it right there, right? And I line the diaphragm of the mic with the in the same plane as the actual cone angle.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Generally. And then what I do is if it sounds terrible when I do that, then I move it around until I like it. But I mean, that's where I always start. Always start.
Favorite kick drum mic.
Favorite kick drum mic. Well, that is, yeah, that's,
I got you thinking.
Yeah. So the Evie years ago had, a kick drum mic that was, what was the original one called? The original one was, what is it here? My memory doesn't serve me very well anymore. an RE20, right? RE20. And they were originally radio mics.
Yeah,
right?
Still use them.
Drum
microphones.
They are for like jazz and stuff, but they don't take a ton of SPL.
Yeah, right.
So, about 10 years ago, Electro Voice came out with a kick drum mic version called the RE320. And it'll do like 140 dB at the diaphragm.
Yeah, the black one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a lot less money. It's like $200.
Yeah.
That has become my go-to kick drum mic. I love that mic. It even has a kick drum setting on it. And it sounds fantastic. When we were first doing tests on it, I was just blown away. I was at a church and I'm not a big Shure Beta 52 lover, but it worked for the drum kit we have. So that's what we used. So we got this RE320 and put it on and didn't even re-EQ it. And he started playing the drum. And I remember looking back at my audio engineer, Marvin, and he looked at me like, what is that? What kind of mic is that? That's crazy. And so I had him flatten the channel out, just take out the EQ, and it sounded phenomenal. And so instantaneously that became my mic, like the RE320. It's affordable, $200. It sounds phenomenal. It works on pretty much any drum. And then the other mic that's my favorite mic, but you can't get them anymore, is the old Audio-Technica ATM-25. Mm. That for years was my go-to mic on floor toms and on kick drums. You used to be able to buy them for like brand new. They were like $165. And then they stopped making them. And then like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, Audio-Technica, I don't know what they were thinking. They came out with the anniversary series. And they were like $500. And I'm like,
wow.
And I remember telling one of the guys at Audio-Technica, I'm like, dude, Nobody's going to pay $500 for a 25 when I can get an original 25 on eBay for $200, for $100 or $200, right? And so I owned a ton of them back in the day. Loved them. Great. It's a big, you know, it's what's like the RE320. It's a big diaphragm mic.
Right.
You got to have a big diaphragm mic on the, you know, and there are guys that like the PR40, the Heil PR40 for mic, nice for mic. Kick drum mics. I like them. They, you know, PR40 was really a radio broadcast mic originally. Yeah. That's what Bob Heil made them for.
Yeah, so it's the 320.
Yeah, but they sound
they
great.
They take a ton of SPL. Yeah,
yeah. That's one of the things that they changed. You know, from because RE20s, if you can find them, because I don't think they make RE20s anymore. But if you can find them, do they still make them?
Yeah,
because they're really expensive though now.
They're like $400.
But I know that the broadcast guys still use RE20s a lot. I know that the Shure
SM7Bs.
Yeah, that's like the flavor of the month right now. It's like the podcasting mic. Everybody has one.
It sounds great on kick drums.
But they really, if I'm going to have a kick drum mic, I'm almost always going to go with the RE320 first. So, yeah, it's. But again, going back to what we said, a lot has to do with the kick drum itself, because I've mic'd kick drums with 57s and had them sound pretty good because the kick drum sounded awesome.
Right.
You know.
Then the size of the kick drum matters a lot.
Size of the kick drum. The heads are super important. I mean, if you want to do a deep dive, sometimes there's a whole thing about the guy that the rock band Muse, which was around for a long time, alternative rock band. There's this whole thing, it's on YouTube somewhere, about how they did the kick drum, and like there's like multiple heads on the beater side, and they're different heads. And there was like this whole philosophy of how they got this like really super like punchy dark sound, not Muse, the Killers. That's who it was. Okay. It's the Killers. And so there's this whole thing, and it's on YouTube somewhere. It was really interesting.
Okay. I got to look that up.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it for church because heads are expensive and you know, you tend to go through a lot of them, but
right.
You know, right. And also the air hole on the front, the air hole on the front is really important. If you have one, I don't like it more than 6 inches. That the max, I would want it, because I actually want it. A lot of how kick drums sound great is the air being forced through the hole. There's a lot of the punch of a kick drum is that.
Right.
And if that hole is too big, you
lose it.
You just don't have it. And I like an aggressive, an attack. And you get that aggressive attack when you like kind of a medium beater head and then that, you know, and then I really like, some kind of a beater pad on the back kick drum, just a little like tiny bit. I don't like it when the beater just hits a head.
Tap.
So there you go. Those are my recommendations.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and dogs, thank you for joining us, episode 25 of the Church Sound Podcast with my good friend, Brother Van. Thank you for being on the show, sir. I learned a whole lot, sir.
I learned that I don't know much. You asked me a lot of questions. I'm like, I don't really think I think of those things that much. So. No, it's been a huge pleasure, and I just one of the things I just love is I love the church tech community and the church sound community, and it's something I've devoted my life to. And I was super excited the first time I heard this podcast, and I was like, I love that there's other people that are jumping into this that have the passion that I have, and that are really trying to help the church community and the Bride of Christ, and just to be better and to encourage, because it's what we do is hard, folks. What we do is hard. And there's a lot of things. It's not just people oppressing us. There's spiritual realm oppressing us. There's a lot of dynamics happening in a church service. Yes. And you are a crucial part of that. And so there are forces out there that want to compromise you by getting you lost in little things that don't matter.
Right. That's true.
You got to keep the most important thing, the most important thing. And
the main thing, the main thing.
Yeah. And so Prentice, I really thank you for finally getting in contact with me. We've actually been trying to, I think we've been trying to connect for like 2 months.
Right. Yeah.
So this has been great. For my listeners, we're going to broadcast this on Church Tech Profiles as well. And, I think we're gonna have to have a follow-up episode on this where I interview you too.
Yeah.
So that'll be
great. That'll be great.
So thank you so much for having me on. It's a sheer pleasure, and I hopefully we've created a friendship and a partnership here that'll go on for time. So all of your listeners, man, be encouraged. You're doing good work for the Lord and for the church, and that's a good thing.
Amen. But like we always say, keep God first in everything you do, and we see you next time on the Church Sound Podcast.
Well, that was such a fun episode to do with Prentice over at the Church Sound Podcast. I had a blast. I hope you guys have enjoyed both part one and part two of my time over there on the Church Sound Podcast. Please go to iTunes, subscribe to the Church Sound Podcast or whatever app that you are on. Support Prentice over there. Give him a good review. Do the same thing for Church Tech Profiles. Even if you're not subscribed on iTunes, go over to iTunes. Please give us a good review. Give us 5-star rating if you'd be so kind. I really appreciate it. On the socials, we have Twitter is Church Tech Pro. Instagram is Church Tech Profiles. Facebook, we have a Facebook page, Church Tech Profiles. You can also see all these episodes or link to these episodes or whatever you want to do if you want to send it to somebody at thesoundbooth.com. You can reach me on all the socials, direct message. I do actually respond to those. And you can email me at van@thesoundbooth.com. And it is Christmas week when this is originally being broadcast. And I just want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. This is a weird year. 2020 has been weird. And I'm not going to have another episode till 2021. So I just want to thank you all for making this podcast, you know, just take off and sharing it with people in the church production world. It's been great. We've just been growing and growing every week. We get more and more listeners, and it's just a lot of fun, just the interaction I'm having with all of you. We've got so much happening in 2021. I can't tell you all the stuff that's about to happen in 2021, but there's going to be a lot of cool stuff happening. Got a lot of things brewing that I think you are all going to like. So if you have somebody that you want interviewed on this podcast, or you want to be interviewed on this podcast, please email me at van@thesoundbooth.com and let me know. Everybody this year in church production has worked super, super hard. Everybody I've talked to, every single technician, every single technical director, every single audio, video, lighting, doesn't matter. Everybody has worked so hard to pull off church this year. I've talked to literally probably hundreds of people that do what you all do. And everybody has worked so hard and is going to continue to work hard through 2021 until beer bug is under control, until everybody gets back together. Who knows what's going to happen? We have a lot of things going on in the world. It is a crazy, crazy time. But everybody that is in church production is doing a stellar job in helping the church reach the world for Jesus. There is probably no more crucial time for reaching people for Jesus than right now. So if no one thanks you, I'm thanking you. All of you are doing a fantastic job, working countless hours, putting the time in, making it excellent, building teams in all these crazy situations. I know what it's like, and you are all doing a fantastic job. Thank you so much. Have a Merry Christmas. Try to take some moments where you can rest and recharge and spend time with your family. I know that it is hard, especially in a year like this, but please try to take some time where you can rest and rely on the Lord for some calmness. Have a great Christmas.
Have a great New Year's Eve. And I will see you in 2021. God bless you. Talk to you later.